Hi, Movie Breakers. Here's Lida again, and I'm still at Venice and have another interview for you, this time with a fantastic movie that runs out of competition. It's by a great director whom we all know, and he's Love Diaz. He's here with me now. Hey, Love.
Hi, Dan. Good morning.
So, yeah, we just talked about how hard it was to get here on time, actually. So, because of the Vaporettos and all the schedules. So, how tight has your schedule been until now?
Not so tight, but it's been quite... I don't say it's hard, but it's the weather. So, it's so strong. The heat is so strong. Yeah, we have to queue every morning. I saw you this morning. You're running. And we noticed you was, oh, it was this punk girl.
it's
nice to be back here.
Yeah, you've been here a couple of times already. And
this is my eighth film here.
That is one thing that I was just going to ask. Like, you make a movie every year, almost every year, not quite every year, but almost every year,
almost,
really. In the last decade, you almost had one every year.
Yeah.
So, and then each movie that you do, they run at great festivals, at Berlinale, at Venice.
Mm.
And, how do you do it? Because your movies also have this intense length, so...
Well, my process is not really, I would say, budget-oriented, because I own my equipment. If there's an idea, I just gather my friends, my co-workers, and we go shoot. And I ask some friends also to support us. So there's been this big community of film workers who, you know, understand the process, and some people are supporting us as well with a little money, so it keeps us going. If there's an idea, we just go. We don't need for some equipment rental companies to provide, or some big funding institutions to give us money. We keep things in moderate, you know, proportion, so that we can keep going. That's how it is, you know. It's not this spectacle filmmaking, it's more about cinema.
And your particular way of cinema, your movies are usually black and white, mm-hmm. and they deal with one specific subject in many variations. It's the influence of the past and the grip the past has on the present, and how there's always both leaking into each other, which is also of your new movie, Fantasmia.
Yeah.
How do you develop those themes? Do they come to you? Do you change them during shooting? How does the story
Most of my films, they were written, I write them during the shoot, but there's already an idea before I shoot, of course. I just work on an idea and then find, the next step would be find the places where to shoot it. I can, you know, I can map out where the actors, where the characters will go. And ultimately, you know, the narrative. I work on the narrative. I work on the characters, work hard on the little things about these characters, about this, you know, their so-called interactions, the simple interactions, and it will grow from there. Of course, I'm always keeping track of the vision of the work, which is the confrontation of the past always, and it's anchored on a very, very particular, you know, period, epoch in our history, the history of not just the Filipinos, humanity itself. Like, this film is set in 1979, which is a period where, you know, things are really going dark in the Southeast Asian part of the world. Indonesia, there's a lot of massacres. In the Philippines, which under another dictator, Marcos. So it is that. You anchor the story around this, and then the narrative will just flow. It will be very organic. And I write the script every day, so I can see where things are going. And we don't rush things. That's the most important thing as well. We shoot 2-3 scenes, 5 scenes a day, and then we rest. And then I analyze everything, and then keep track, you know, follow the characters where we will go. It is that kind of process. It's like a painting. You just start with a blank canvas, and then you start, you know, dripping it with red, and then it becomes, you know, this thing. Eventually, it will have its own, you know, universe.
And how do the actors and actresses influence your work? Do they have an influence on the characters? Do you develop the characters with them or talk with them? Or do you have a very specific idea of how a certain
it's all of the above. It's all of the above. All of this there. I observe them. I check what are they doing with the characters. And of course, I talk to them. They talk to me if they have questions. If I have questions, I talk to them. And then it's an everyday thing. We talk to each other. What do you think? Where is the character going? What is he going to do today? I even ask them. I ask their input. And they give me things. Even their little gestures will give you something. They're very, very nuance that you don't see really, but you can feel it. They exude that thing, so you follow it. These threads that open up, you have to follow it. And it's important for your character in the narrative. Yeah.
Your new movie, Phantasmia, which is now running here, the title refers to a specific condition which causes phantom smells, so that people smell something that is not actually there, and often it is, one doesn't really know how it is caused, but one theory besides brain damage is a trauma and shock. And this is also something that in a certain way the main character has occurred, even though he might not even be aware that he has lived through those traumas in the past, because he's very conditioned on being a soldier and he lives with this normalization of violence.
Yes, yes.
Would you like to elaborate a bit on how you came to this specific character and how you came across this very specific condition?
Years ago, one of my relatives, a woman relative, was confined to a military hospital because we have a friend who recommended us, because it's cheap and free, almost free, so we got a space there. And I was there for like almost a month taking care of my relatives, and I noticed there's one section in the hospital and they're trying to keep it. I hear a lot of shouts or some troubled persons inside. It's just very unusual for a hospital, because in hospitals they're sick, blah, blah. But this one, you see a lot of activity. And I researched and I realized that it's these soldiers are coming from combat duty, and they're workshop, they call them the workshop personnel, who couldn't get past the trauma or the killing or their bodies being killed. So it is that kind of, I researched on it and I realized there are so many consequences of the trauma. One is concussion, the phantom smell, and then it stayed with me. During the, of course, when I was doing this film, it's not yet there, but when I started creating the characters, I said, oh, this element of that phantom smell that I've encountered in that psychiatric ward can be, you know, an element, an attribute that can contribute to our work. So I work on it.
It's a very powerful metaphor also.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because smells have such a strong influence on us.
Yeah, yeah.
It even says that it influences the people we like and dislike.
It also speaks about how at some point in our lives, because we're numb with what's happening, you know, the dysfunctional system that we have in the country, at some point you don't smell the bad smells anymore, the bad odor. It's, you know, it is the kind of, you know, reverse condition as well, where you just let go of those bad smells if you don't see. You see corruption, but at some point you get numb. Okay, let it go. It's how the system works. You just embrace it, and it's,
How would you say do your movies connect to the present? Because they often play in the past, but they are very strong parallels, as you already mentioned, in them for the present. Did you also think about making stories that are specifically only about the present times, or do you like to always put it into a chronological line?
Yeah, it is. It represents everything that every narrative or any discourse in the past is always pretty much a discourse in the present, because the present is a consequence of the past. Yeah, and it evokes what's gonna happen in the future. If we don't confront it, if we don't examine it, if we don't, you know, address the issue, it's a big issue, yeah.
And then your main character, he also has to face the horrible things that he has done in his past life.
Yeah.
And a huge issue in the movie is the conditioning of violence, how people get indoctrinated with violence. Yeah. And this is a very tough subject, and I feel, or at least in my impression, you've never dealt with it as intensely as in this movie. It was there, but it was never dealt in such an intense way, because there are also some very, very violent scenes. Not so much that we see physical violence in the sense of splatter, but it's basically psychological violence,
or
the cruelty of humans to one another, also connected to the main female character, like a young girl, which is also mentally troubled and traumatized, even though we don't know exactly what she has. How did you come to this part of the story, and how did you decide this is the most effective way to show violence? Because many people, I think, would resort to, like, you know, shootings, splatter effects, things like that.
Yeah, the very fact that the metaphor of the penal colony is an imprisonment. A prison house, you know, and then there's the gate, and then beyond the gate, it's just a few meters away, there's another prison house, which is this mother trafficking his foster child, his adopted child. And it's even worse when you look at it, because, you know, how can a human being be so evil? That kind of discourse, you know, I want to have that kind of discourse in the film. You know, you see layers from the big, big, you know, very physical structuring of the penal colony, and then outside, which is supposed to be freer, but it's not. You know, there's so many layers of imprisonment all over. You know, we need to just be aware of them. You have to acknowledge them as well, that things are happening like that.
And also you yourself deal with those very tough issues again and again in your films. And does it also trouble you? Because I imagine it also as a burden, like always bring this up again and work through it in a film from another perspective.
Yes, of course, it's very hard because most of the things that, like the trafficking of the child, the woman, the young woman, I've seen this, I witnessed this. In very impoverished areas in our country, they really traffic their very own children, or their wives, or, you know, some friends who are in need. So it blurs the moral line. You know, man is a moral being, but when it comes to a need like that, then we just blur things away, just to survive. And at some point, the issue of morality is gone. Well, the issue of being human, at least, is gone, you know. It's just about survival. Yeah, the very instinctive, you know, animal way of seeing things. Animalistic way of seeing things.
Yeah. And still, there is some hope in those films, and also this film, that you can get through to the good in human, and that even somebody who has done horrible things might still, at some point, do the right thing, even if it's just once or one change.
Yeah. I need to put that in my stories so that I still have faith in humanity. I still have faith in man. I've seen so many very dark abysses in my country, but at least I don't want to lose it. My faith in humanity. Yeah. So I want to reflect within my film that we can still affect change. You can still do things, you know. Violence can still be, you know, you can still confront it, you know, in a very humanistic way, yeah.
And what do you think is necessary to get to that change? What would you say?
Like, awareness, you know, acknowledgement that things are happening. We should always acknowledge that Ukraine is happening, that Gaza is happening, that people are crossing the Mediterranean every day just to reach Europe to survive. So we mustn't forget these things, you know. It's easy to forget and just be cool with our coffee, you know. But it should be that. That's why there's a need to confront always the past and what's happening now, you know. Otherwise we're losing it.
Absolutely, and yeah, you do it in a very, very powerful way.
Thank
and
you. Yeah.
I also would like to ask a few questions about the actors in your movie, because how do you find them? Or do you go to a conventional casting process, or do you just find those people?
They're my friends.
Yeah, and often you work again with same actors.
I've been working with Hazel Lorenzo, the mother of the young lady. I've been working with Ronnie Lazzaro for so many, in so many films.
The main character, Ronnie Lazzaro.
So I know them and they know the process. So we have a kind of rapport, a kind of working relations where we don't have to talk much. We focus on the vision of the work, on the discourse of the work. They focus on the characters and we just check each other. We prepare well. And you know, we know that what we're doing is not for the money. It's for, you know, for cultural work, for some discourse on humanity. Yeah.
And we already mentioned that your movies are very long. They make one literally feel the time. One really starts to live in that world that the movie shows.
Yeah.
Do you have a certain set language or frame at the beginning, or do you just go on and it takes how long it takes?
Of course, no. It's things are done in the editing room. If it's 6 hours, then it's six. If it's 5 minutes, then it's 5 minutes.
Because your first movies, they were long, but they were like 2 hours or 2.5 hours. And then there was this point where you kind of got into this very long.
Yeah.
And was it like a change in yourself that you said, no, I'm not going to limit it by this specific frame?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because somebody said a movie is 2 hours. And
yeah, because I've done four works in the studio, which is very imposing. And you just limit your work to 2 hours. So for me, yeah, it's... It's very regretful. It's very, you know, to hear even intelligent people to say that, you know, the endurance, you know, the people can only watch up to 1.5 hours or 2 hours. No, it's never true. It's an imposed thing, you know, by capitalism, by profit motive. Cinema must be free for me. It is a simple principle where I want to liberate my cinema beyond the imposed conventions of movie making. I'm not making movies, I'm making cinema.
It also turns the cinematic experience into a physical and personal experience, because if you spend such a long time with in one movie, in one film world, you're also forced to engage with everything that happens in a completely different way. Or you also might feel things that the characters go through if they are tired, because they're walking, you get tired, and things that you feel the time pass. How much do you consciously create those impressions, or is it for you more organically that you say, I just let it happen and every viewer takes their own impression?
There is a conscious, you know, deliberate effort of doing it, and at the same time, you let it work organically as well. Things, you know, you have to mix those things. Because, you know, when you're shooting, specifically when you're shooting, things are happening and you have to let it, you know, you have to be very open about it instead of imposing, this can only last 2 minutes. But when you see things opening up, okay, just let the camera roll, just let the actor do their thing, or the characters do their thing. And at some point, it's leading to another trajectory. And it's great that way, because part of the process of making cinema is the issue of, you know, what do you call that? Not knowing what's going to happen, you know, discovery, the issue of discovery, the issue of possibilities. It will give you that if you live, if you're not imposing a certain duration or, you know, process. If you do that, it's like, you know, it's free. Like it's like you're writing a free verse thing where just. You just keep writing everything. At some point, it makes sense. The verses make sense. The cadences in the lines make sense. It's the same with long cinema, I guess. It's like a novel where the spaces make sense. The little things make sense. You know, you don't have to cut them. You don't have to, you know, abridge them to please somebody. You don't have to please somebody, you know. Just make it happen and, you know, this is the work. you know, experience it, please.
Yeah, that's a good cue, policing, because we have also this policing that we mentioned in past podcasts, that this Georgian movie in the side section didn't get shown because there was pressure from Russia. So the policing is even happening right here at Venice, when films could be shown publicly but are not shown. And what I also want to ask, do you develop your stories parallel, or are you always working on one project and then it's the next, or do they leap into each other?
Some are overlapping, because like I told you a while ago, we have cheap, you know, equipment. I have little cameras, little lights, or nothing at all. We have our sound equipment. So everything is possible. If there's an idea while we're doing another one thing, we can go, you know, try this thing, this idea, work on it, and go back to this. They overlap. And I don't mind doing that kind of, you know, process where things are overlapping. And it's good as well, because if you stop doing one thing, you keep it there, and then you go back 3 months, 6 months later, it's another thing. It's now alive. You know, there's something in the image, there's something in the, you know, even in the words that they say, and then you can follow another thread for a greater, you know, discourse on something. And humanity's troubles and humanity's struggle. It is, I love that kind of process where you don't really impose, you just let things go. Okay, we work on this story today. If it's not working, we just keep it for a while. Then we go back weeks, months later, and then, ooh, it's saying something. It's leading us to this, you know, thread, this door. And now, not just like this film, it's not supposed to happen, because the actor, a day before we shot the film, the actor quit. We were preparing for 2 months, the actor quit, and so the producer quit, so we don't know what's going to happen. And I asked a friend to help us, so it went to another trajectory, you know. The incident of being abandoned by the actor and the producer led us to another perspective. Yeah.
Do you have a lot of abandoned project or abandoned material, or are you one of the directors that use most of the material they shoot and rarely abandon a project?
Well, there are projects that I really stop doing because I find that they're not really working. So it is that kind of acknowledgement as well, you know. If it's not working, then you have to be very, very realistic, you know. It's not working, so we stop. Thank you, guys.
And at the moment, are you working on a new idea already?
Yeah. We're going to shoot in December, and we're preparing.
And would you like to just give a little hint about what it is?
It's set in the 16th century. So.
Oh, so that is something very new.
Yeah, 16th century Philippines, so we don't know. So everything is like, okay, before the Spanish came, before, you know, it's something.
And now that you still have this movie here, what do you hope does the audience take away from when they watch this, as a final question?
It's still connecting. I consider my works as one work anyway. It's a continuing discourse with humanity, continuing dialogue with you. You know, my cinema, I treat it like that. The titles and the gaps are just, you know, chapters. It's one word, you know. It's an artist or somebody talking to somebody. It's that kind of dialogue. We have coffee today, and then next month we have coffee again. It is like that. We continue the discourse. So it is like that, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
now
yeah.
We have to make a short, but we're here still at Venice, and yeah. I could speak to Lav Diaz. It was a great interview, and you can see his film. It will certainly get a German release, and we tell you at Movie Break when it's time for that. Thank you, Lav.
Thank you so much.